your host, Holly, and it's time for a little teaser talk. Happy Teaser Talk Tuesday. Today we are going to dive, no pun intended, into Fear of Water, a one-man phenomenon crafted by the very talented Dave Perry. From collaborations with industry icons to relentless pursuit of musical expression, you guys are going to need to be prepared to be amazed at Dave's musical universe. Welcome to Teaser Talk, Dave.
I've done a bunch of podcasts, and that is the best intro I've ever had. The relentless pursuit part is got me fired up. It made me want to hear the interview, and I'm the guy being interviewed. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Beautiful. I can't wait for it. And I have to say, I've had the pleasure of having some amazing, talented artists on the podcast. And I will say, like, obviously, this is your first time being on the show, but I will say your story was like, I was inspired just by reading your story and like reading about you. And obviously you have badass music. So I'm just so excited to really share with listeners your story. And for those who aren't familiar with your music, you know, really give them a taste of that, because I am here for it.
I really appreciate that. I can't overstate enough the importance of people like you who are carrying basically the music journalism and culture torch simultaneously in an age where we're so like fragmented and spread way too thin across all of our social platforms and websites, let alone if you know what people are still reading and subscribing to and listening to. And it's just I really appreciate what you do and being a part of it. So thank you.
Oh, that is very sweet. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. But you know, with that being said, I'd love to just start out this conversation with, can you share your story? Because it is a great one.
Sure. Well, I've been at this for a while, and I've been very fortunate that basically, you know, COVID quarantine really gave me this carpe diem reality check of like, you know, I had family members die, unfortunately, and just that reality check of like, literally the whole world can stop spinning as we know it with no given notice and for some indeterminate period of time. And you know, a music career is something I've been pursuing my entire life, and I have taken it very seriously up until that point. But coming out of that, I was like, if there's anything that I'm holding back, if I'm at 85% right now, like, why am I not at 100%? And I really have just been absolutely flooring it since then. But taking a huge step back, I think what you're referring to is the fact that I was born clinically deaf. And sometimes there's confusion about like what that means. I think people think about maybe deafness and blindness as a binary thing. It's like you can either see or you can't. But as someone that's wearing glasses, it's pretty easy to say that vision is on a spectrum, and there isn't much of an equivalent short of seeing someone with like hearing aids as it relates to hearing being a spectrum, but it very much is. And when I was born, I basically had double ear infections, and a lot of the byproducts of that kind of, disease battle as an infant with like no immune system, that just kept getting worse and compounding itself. And it's very difficult to treat aggressive infections in a 5-day-old. And it just kept getting worse, and they had a really hard time pinpointing what was going on, because a baby can't be like, you know, this hurts. They're checking to see like if I'm actually deaf. Not responding to audio stimulation is also like a sign of being on the spectrum. So they were like looking into a lot of things, and they finally figured out what was going on. But then they have to figure out this very delicate regimen of like, how do we aggressively fight an aggressive disease in an infant? And so that led to, you know, 7 years of a pretty crazy struggle in terms of you know, surgery and hundreds of hours of speech therapy and really hardcore medications that at the time were FDA approved, but are no longer FDA approved because they were causing like spinal disc deterioration and just a whole lot of crazy things. But I look back at all of that and say, like, with how much music has been a part of my life and how much it's given to me, I would have taken all of those consequences. If I was in a wheelchair right now, but able to have music in my life, as opposed to being completely able-bodied, but not being able to like live a life that is rooted in music, I don't want to live that life. So music was a huge part of my recovery in terms of like unlocking my cognitive abilities again. I've talked to many neuroscientists about basically what my journey was very similar to what stroke patients go through and what severe head trauma victims go through. But it was at this really critical phase in the beginning of my life when we're all learning these really important fundamental rudimentary skills. Without going too deep into the specifics, like music was a huge part of like literally physically unlocking and creating these synapses in my brain that allowed me to, use the rest of my brain in a cognitive fashion that most of us take for granted. And ever since that happened, I just knew that music was maybe not necessarily fate, but there's like a biochemical reality that like music has had a huge impact on me physically and cognitively early on. And I just knew I need to dedicate my life to this. And it's been, you know, I cherish that. And I'm a huge advocate of ear protection at shows and at the practice space, whatever. Like hearing is such a precious gift that none of us should squander because it's so easy to protect. But yeah, that's just had a huge impact on my entire life.
That's incredible. Like I think that that's something that everyone always takes. I know I definitely take it for granted. You know, I wake up and I complain about, I don't know, first world problems, right? Like whatever. Mm-hmm. But like I wake up and I can hear, I can wake up, I can talk, yeah. I can wake up, yep. I can see. And a lot of people take that to, they definitely take it for granted because it's not something that we don't have that threat of it being taken away until it's taken away, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think
it's incredible. So I'm curious though, too, because obviously music has been a part of your life. I mean, here we are. But like, where was that moment of time where you were like, whoa, this is amazing to consume? Like, this is like, what is this going into my ears? What is this melody?
So I understand the question, but I'm going to take it to the next level, which is this. I had this, like, if there's ever one time in my entire life that I had an epiphany, it's this moment that I'm going to describe to you. So I didn't start talking fluently, I guess you would say, until about 6. And, you know, at the time that I'm just beginning to gain my language skills, everyone else is like learning arithmetic and writing cursive and, maybe even dabbling in a second language, like just colors and nouns and stuff like that. And I was like, starting from the beginning, couldn't read an analog clock, couldn't tie my shoes, couldn't remember the difference between right and left. Like I had to do the like bed thing. I don't know if you've ever seen kids do that, but like, just like I had this huge uphill battle to go through and I was so far behind everyone else. And pretty early on, you know, I realized that, certain kids are good at school. Certain kids are good at sports. And I was just neither of those things. And I was, because music had already kind of called to me as I was getting my hearing back, like music was the thing that soothed me the most. Mm-hmm. I highly suggest anyone listening, watch the movie Sound of Metal. They do a phenomenal job of depicting hearing loss and how that is a spectrum. And it's scary. It's scary to have your senses so obfuscated and distorted, and it is the way that we interpret the world around us other than sight. So music was a very soothing force and energy around me as I was getting comfortable with like the sounds of the world and construction and cars and people's voices and yelling and stuff. So anyways, early on I realized I'm fucking up at school, I'm not good at sports, I love music, I want to invest myself in this, but I was terrible. Like I couldn't figure out anything. I tried out for band. The band teacher very nicely basically said, like, I'm going to just stick you in the percussion section because you can't do anything. I couldn't like pat my head, rub my belly, let alone like, have the ambidexterity that a drummer needs. And I became really obsessed with the idea of like cutting the strings of the marionette. Because at the time I'd like lift my right arm and my right leg would go up in a drumming sense. Like I was not able to have that independence. And a lot of people struggle with that. So I remember very vividly that it was like spring break. It's in fifth grade. We were driving from Wisconsin to Florida in this giant conversion van that we did every year, and it takes like 20 hours. And I'm sitting in the back of the van. I have my disc man, and I'm listening to the Load album by Metallica. And I'm just playing the first track over and over and over again. It has this very straightforward drum beat, but like I could not do it. And I was like, it was very frustrating because it reminded me of speech therapy where the therapist would be like, cup, and point at the cup and spell cup and show me the letters cup and show me what she was doing phonetically with her mouth. And I got all of that. Like, it made sense. I understood what a cup was. I use cups. I hear you saying cup. But then when it came to say the word cup, I literally had like a stutter. There was just this barricade between my brain and my ability to say it. So it was very similar with drumming where I was just like, I get it. Like, I've seen videos. I can hear when the kick is and when the snare is and that the hi-hat's going like this and the crash is, you know, during drum fills. Like, I understood all of that. And then I sat down to do it and I just could not. So for literally 20 hours on this car ride, I'm just playing the same song on my lap, air drums, over and over and over again. And on like the 90th play, there is this enormous pop in my head. And I can only equate it to like what it's like to have your ears pop on an airplane, but times 50. And it was so visceral that I like threw my headphones off, and I have two older brothers. And I was like, so one of them must have literally just punched me in the back of the head. And I realized that I'm in the back of the van, so they couldn't have been behind me. And I'm just sitting there. You know, again, I'm in fifth grade. I have no cognition of like what might be physically, biochemically happening in my brain. And I'm like, I'm not going to say anything about this out loud because I'm just going to get ridiculed or sound like I'm crazy. So I just sat there for like 10 minutes, calmed down, put the headset back on, started the song over, and then all of a sudden I could just do it. Like, the strings have been cut, and I could get goosebumps even thinking about it now. Like, it truly was this epiphany moment of like, holy shit. Like, not only are the strings cut, but it was the first time I really realized if I put a concerted amount of extreme effort towards something that seems impossible, I can do it. And that entire spring break, even though we're like on the beach in Florida, and I just sat in my room with my giant book of CDs and listened to every single 90s grunge artist I could think of, and was just set up the pillows and got some spoons from the kitchen. And I was like, oh my God, like, I unlocked this incredible talent. Like, it just made sense to me. And I was like, oh, cool, I'm great. I'm set with music. So that was spring break. We come back from the trip, go back to school. And the very first Monday, I'm like, holy shit, I can read an analog clock and cursive makes sense to me now. And my short-term memory is starting to work and timetables make sense to me. And so anyways, I've talked to neurologists about this, and the same thing. They said like, this is what stroke patients and like head trauma victims go through, is that you literally have like scar tissue buildup in the grooves of your gray matter. And through, you know, certainly surgery, but therapy and other tactics, like you can, it's slowly but surely fight through it. And when that synapse finally happens, it actually creates a physical sensation in your skull. And I had that happen. And just knowing that that happening unlocked the rest of like my cognitive abilities, it just made it abundantly clear to me that music is insanely important to like who I am and whatever this journey of life is going to be. And ever since, I've just been like relentless.
Yeah. Like, okay, you guys, I told you, you're going to be amazed. And I was already excited. Don't get me wrong. But like, now I'm literally like mind blown emoji, like, whoa, that is incredible. So to hear you, like, literally music changed your life. And not, you know, some people say that, of course, you know, it does, but like, literally you were like a completely, I guess we'd say 180, not 360, because you'd be back where you were, but wow, that is incredible.
And you know, just even at like, I'm not saying that I was like a prophetic 10-year-old, but like, I knew enough at that point in time, and all the struggles that I've played up to this point, is that this is important. This is profound. This means something in a life that's full of, you know, soccer games and sleepovers or whatever. Like, you know, everything was just the next day. Then like something happened where I'm like, I have fundamentally changed from this moment on. And it is the first time I've ever felt purpose in life. And it felt insane to do anything other than completely focus my abilities on picking up as many instruments as possible. And then as time went on, you know, getting a computer and downloading primitive recording software and understanding programming drums and mixing, and then just starting to research mastering, and then getting jobs in studios. And I just became so, and then let alone, you know, getting into bands and writing songs, but I just became so consumed with like the universe has spoken to me in some way and I have to listen to it. And this is so important. It's been an incredibly rewarding journey for sure.
Yeah, that is amazing. I appreciate you sharing all that, because wow, yeah, that is wildly awesome. Yeah. You know, one thing that's very interesting, or I found very interesting, and I know everyone else will as well, but Fear of Water is a one-man band. So not only do you have these, I don't want to say challenges, but I guess I could say challenges of, you know, really producing the music and everything else. Yeah. Now you went from like, okay, now I can, you know, I can play the drums. I can physically do it. You know what I mean? But now you went from that to like, you know what, why not do everything else as well? So I'm just curious, when it comes to being a one-man band, what kind of inspired you to create that venture? And how has that musical journey of doing everything shaped your creativity?
Sure. Good question. I'll start off by saying that, like, I just didn't grow up around a lot of musicians. And if they were musicians, it was in a more classical sense, like someone who was taking orchestra very seriously, or someone who was, you know, only had an interest in being the guy at the party that could pick up an acoustic guitar and play Wonderwall and get chicks. But like, I just knew early on, I love cover songs, but I've never had an interest in learning other people's music. And especially, like, I started on piano. I took lessons for a handful of years, enjoyed the relationship I was forming with this amazing, beautiful instrument, but fucking hated being told what to do. Yep. And the straw that broke the camel's back is that I came in one day, I saved up money and bought the sheet music for November Rain by Guns N' Roses. And I was really excited. Like, I was excited to show my teacher that I took the like initiative and was showing my own personal passion in this. I was like, I really want you to teach me this. And she was just flat out like, no, like there's no space for G and R in this room. It's all like, you know, the fundamentals and the classics. And it was in that moment I was like, cool, I quit. I'm not doing this. But I didn't quit my relationship with the piano. In fact, it like, I'm all for learning theory, and there's a lot to be gained from any musician, from structure and adding those tools to their kit. But at that point in my musical journey, I felt it was repressing me. And then at that point, it just like opened me up in all new ways, which also began my relationship with picking up a guitar. I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I didn't even know what tuning was, let alone like, I literally just sat there for hours with a guitar and like made shapes with my hands. Like, is that something? Nope. I couldn't read tabs. I couldn't read chords. I still can't read chords. My ears became this amazing tool for me, not just to hear, but to interpret. And I just have ever since then really been able to just hear a song and then sit down and play it on all of the instruments once I taught those instruments to myself. And, you know, if I grew up in a community that had more people on a similar journey as me, just people who just wanted to play guitar, get in a garage and make loud rock music, then I probably wouldn't be on this Fear of Water journey. But the reality is, I just didn't have that community or resources. And I was obsessed with Nirvana really early on. And I very vividly remember Kurt's death. The love of Nirvana was a very turnkey way to get into Foo Fighters. And, you know, I was quickly reading interviews and articles about how Dave Grohl had done this all by himself. And he wasn't even Dave Grohl at that point. He was just the drummer of Nirvana, you know? And then like, Ed made me realize like, holy shit, like this is like actually a thing that you can do and be successful with, or at least just create a physical product by yourself in a studio and then share it with the world. And that inspired me to save up and buy this Tascam 4-track cassette recorder, which, you know, there was more advanced technology at the time, but it's all like that I could afford. And I went through this process of basically creating something from nothing for the very first time on a cassette. It sounded terrible, but it was mine, and it was my voice, and it was my byproduct of like literally just pulled some essence out of the ether and recorded it. And it was, that moment was just as profound as being in the back of the van and feeling that enormous pop in my skull where I was like, this is real. I can do this. Like, this is the beginning of something really important. And ever since then, I've been incredibly attracted to guys like Dave Grohl and Trent Reznor and Clint Lowry and Phil Collins and Peter Gabriel. And, you know, more recently guys like Wolfgang Van Halen, like anyone who can go into a studio and make an entire album by themselves, essentially. And of course, with the assistance of an amazing engineer. And if you have a producer or songwriters or whatever, all of that is great as well. But, you know, I've been doing this for a very long time. and have had a lot of dead ends and failure, or just kind of coasting in neutral. And anytime I felt like, why am I still doing this? I look at guys like that, or there's plenty of, even with like the advancement of social media and YouTube, there's so many like social media specific musicians out there who are either complete virtuosos in their one instrument or doing something in the same universe as what I'm doing. And I just continue to find inspiration in that. Plus making music is like talking and breathing to me. So even if I wasn't having commercial success and doing interviews and having songs on Octane and charting on the SMR Top 50, I would still be doing this until I die. So it's just like really, really awesome icing on the cake that I've been able to do this weird one man band thing. And it's, you know, it's finally starting to take off, and it's been really exciting.
I think that's incredible. Yeah. Like it's so awesome to kind of see and hear your passion, because of course, you know, musicians are passionate, but to really, like, you're like, I just like water and air to breathe. I need music to live. So yeah. I think that's incredible. So, you know,
thank you.
You have had some amazing collaborations, like artists like Eli's from Nonpoint. You've got Aaron from Gemini Syndrome, Heidi Shepherd from Butcher Babies. Obviously, I'm assuming that those collaborations and working with them had to have been epic for you. Can you share your experience in collaborating with them and what that was like?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been incredible. And, you know, I like to think about what can happen for an artist in 1 year. Just a few examples that are a little hyperbolic that I can think of is, I remember in 1998, on a Wednesday night, I went into there in Milwaukee. There's the basically the only rock venue is called The Rave, and it has three floors that go in increasing value in terms of like headliners play in the top floor, decent touring bands, in the first floor, and then like basically local bands or shitty bands, basement. And so on a random Wednesday night, I went to go see this little band called Nickelback, on a open up for another band called Three Doors Down. And, you know, they played like a 5-song set. And again, it was on a weekday, and I went there because I had 2 drink minimum tickets. Like, it was, I'd heard a Leader of Men, and I wanted to go check it out. 1 year after that, How You Remind Me had come out, and they were headlining arenas. Another example is that for 3 months in 2022, I was on tour with Nothing More, and the headliner was In This Moment, but the opener of that tour and who I shared a tour bus with 3 months is this band called Sleep Token. And, you know, at that point in time, they were like sharing a bus and sharing a trailer and playing like a 5-song set because they just weren't known and established and, you know, had very minimal resources. And again, like 1 year later, their North American tour is selling out in 5 minutes. I'm going to hang out with them at Red Rocks, which they're headlining the second week of May. You know, they played Wembley. Like, it's incredible. So I like to think, anyways, bring that full circle. I like to think that you and I are going to be having this conversation 1 year from now. And I already fondly look back at my collaborators, but what's really important is that these 5 or 6 people gave me a chance when I had no concrete metrics to point to as to like why you should collaborate with me. I didn't have music videos with hundreds of thousands of views. I didn't have a song on Octane. I didn't have a top 10 song with, you know, amazing lead singers of amazing bands. And really just this first batch of people needed to decide whether or not they wanted to dedicate their time and effort and put their name on something in perpetuity for a guy that they've never heard of that's making music by himself out of Austin, Texas. So I'm incredibly grateful for this first batch of people. Like you said, everyone that you mentioned, Elias from Nonpoint, Aaron from Gemini Syndrome, Heidi from Butcher Babies, Marcos from Il Nino, and Clint Lowry from Seven Dust. That's the next single that's coming out. And, you know, it has given me so much like momentum. It really just gave me the platform and opportunity to kind of prove myself in a way that would give me access to like their fan bases. And it's just ever since doing the first couple of those, it's opened up so much doors and it's really built a ton of momentum. But it also required like a lot of, this didn't come out of nowhere. You know, like I said, I've been grinding for 20 years and coming out of quarantine, I was just like, I'm done not doing absolutely 100% and completely flooring it. And, you know, I struck out a bunch of times, but very fortunately, especially with some of these, Clint Lowry is, you know, like I said, I put him on that list of like, of with like Trent Reznor and Dave Grohl. So like doing, creating music with him, like he's featured on this song and he helped co-write three more songs that have yet to come out. He's not featured on it, but like just creating art with someone that I literally had, like, you know, I have pictures behind me, like Clint's picture was behind me, you know, 25 years ago, like that. It's very hard to articulate how much that means to me and what kind of like a full circle bucket list moment that is. And again, then that inspires me so much more. Again, what can happen in a year? Because a year before that, I wasn't even having these conversations or even considering this as a possibility. I was just like, I'm going to keep making the best music I can and putting it out and we'll see what happens. And now I've just been like, I'm going to do everything in my power. And then there's still, you know, rejection's a harsh word, but there's still a lot of dead ends, I would say, in terms of like what I'm pursuing. And it still takes a lot of time and effort and coordination and negotiating and whatever to get all of the and scheduling to get all of this to come together. But like now that all of these, the fruits of these labors are starting to see the light of day and like having that tangible, having that response from fans across the country. And like just yesterday I was, you know, checked the SMR top 50. And so my current single is with Aaron from Gemini Syndrome and it just hit 21 on the SMR top 50. Thank you. And just seeing like looking at that list and it's like Metallica and Green Day and Nickelback and Foo Fighters and Avenged Sevenfold and Nothing More and Beartooth and Godsmack. And then this guy you've never heard of who's making music by himself. And you'll look at all those bands and it's like Warner, BMG, Capitol, Spine Farm. And then again, my made up label right below that. Like it means it's really important to me. And it also just as a fan of music gives me faith that there's still, I don't want to say that I'm like carrying the torch for independent artists, but like I'm trying. Like it's important that someone like me, like I'm not signed. I don't have a management company. Like it's just, if you are incredibly persistent and keep just never give up. Again, I can't emphasize enough the amount of like dead ends that I've hit. But it's, I've through that, the byproduct of that is finally finding the right path and going through the right doors and building somewhat of a team around me, and start getting success. All of this is a learning experience. I'm learning those lessons and then really flooring it on those nuggets of wisdom that I pull out of these experiences. And, yeah, it's been going incredibly well collaborating with those people, especially the ones that all of them have been great, but like high school Dave was sitting in his shitty 1997 Oldsmobile Achieva and was blasting Statement by Nonpoint the day that it came out. And I've been an enormous fan, like an enormous Nonpoint fan, since day one, essentially. So if I could get in a time machine and tell 16-year-old Dave that 36-year-old Dave was going to be making music with Elias, he'd be like, where'd you get that fucking time machine? And also, I don't believe you. yeah, man, it's been so cool. And all of these artists have been incredibly gracious and great collaborators too. You know, a lot of times there's always this possibility that a collaborator will be like, give me the exact instruction manual, like give me the song, you sing my part so I can hear how it's supposed to sound. Give me the exact timestamps, you know, give me the notation, tell me what the harmonies are, tell me what file format you want this in. And I'm going to give you, it's very clinical. Like I'm just going to give you the exact output of the instruction manual that you give to me. Technically that's fine. And I would be okay with that. But fortunately, every single person I've collaborated with has actually collaborated and been a part of the creative process and brought fresh thinking and new perspectives and creative ideas and spins. And some of these artists have even like written lyrics and provided new like melodic sections that weren't in there originally. And they've also all been incredible partners in like promoting the music and like getting me introduced to their community and their resources. And it's been phenomenal. And I it will be an honor for me to be able to pay that forward someday when I'm in a position to help other independent artists out that just need someone to give them a chance. But it's been incredible. Like I'm so unbelievably proud of all of this music. And there's so much more in the works right now that I cannot wait. I wish I could just release a song every single day, but the reality is you have to like give it time to get out on the radio. And even the fact that it's being embraced by like hundreds of rock stations across the country and that there are people, like when people on Instagram, total strangers, I just open it up and there's a video of some dude in his F-150 who's like filming his dashboard and it says fear of water, codependent parasites or systemic or one day or whatever. Yeah. It blows my mind every single time. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. Radio. Like it's, it's insane. It's very, very cool. Even the fact that it means, I don't know, just it's all means a lot to me and it's incredible. And I'm so thankful for this. And, you know, I also know that I've like, I built this life and I've worked incredibly hard for it, but there's also elements of chaos and luck and other people being incredibly gracious. And so that's all been awesome. But yeah, I'm just so excited about the momentum that has been built from this first round of collaborations. And I can't wait to see and share with everyone what comes next.
Yeah. I'm going to add it on my calendar after we get done here. I'm going to add it from 1 year from today. Well, yeah,
like, let's do it.
Interview.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Because
that'd be amazing.
Funny because I can kind of relate in that same sense too, because you know, growing up, like I grew up super poor, like eating out of trash cans, super poor. And I remember my sister, we saved our change together to buy a demo cassette. That's gonna age me right there. But we bought this demo cassette of a band we didn't know at the time, and the band was called Third Eye Blind, and there's like 3 or 4 songs. And I remember that summer we played that cassette tape until like that ribbon broke. Fast forward to 2019, I'm getting escorted by their manager and security to go do an interview in the green room. And I just remember thinking of like, man, if I could go back in time and go back to, you know, my small town America and be like,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it really is. And I think it has to do with, like you said, hard work, dedication, grit, passion, and, you know, not, you just keep, instead of taking it as like, oh, I'm rejected or, oh, this is not going to happen. It's just like, okay, lesson learned. How can I improve moving forward? And I think, you know, because it definitely wasn't anything that was just like fell into my lap. I mean,
yeah,
it's consistency, it's hard work, it's dedication, and obviously passion. But yeah. And then the same thing too. Like I remember growing up in high school, like it was like, I was one of those kids that thought they were like we were jackass wannabes. Like we would like sure. have our own stupid little sure. stunts.
Sure.
And we just loved like, you know, all that thing jammed out to CKY. Well, then I think it was like 2021, maybe. I can't remember. It's been a couple of years. But my podcast interview, I became homies with Jess. I had him on my podcast a couple of times. But then like my podcast intro was actually recorded at Castle Bam. Nice. I remember like crawling into that bed, like I would say to one of the bedrooms upstairs.
Yeah.
Where I was like laying in the bed and I turned the TV on and I see like a heartogram and a Sharpie like on the TV. And I'm like, man, 15-year-old Holly would think that I was so fucking cool right now. So I know those moments.
I love that. I just listened to an interview with Conan O'Brien a couple days ago, and he was talking about when he, you know, he grinded it out and ate shit and did internships and, you know, went through massive rounds of rejection and was told relentlessly that being a comedian is a waste of time and a waste of a career. And then he finally achieves this level of success where he's like the lowest rung on the totem pole of a writer at SNL. And even at that point, he's like, holy shit, like I made it, even though, I mean, like nothing he wrote got to air. No one wanted to hear him talk or whatever. And when he was doing that, he would, once he got comfortable enough to like leave the space, once a week, he would leave the SNL offices and go down 2 floors to where Letterman was recording. And he would sit at his desk and write SNL skits there. And he even said like, I just did that just to like feel the energy and like sit where TV history was happening every night. But like, if you asked me back then, is there any possibility in any universe that I will be sitting at this desk officially 20 years from now and carrying the torch of late night, be like, you're absolutely insane. It is quite literally impossible. No series of events could ever transpire to make this happen. And now he's a legend. And so I truly hope that everyone has this kind of experience to some degree for no other reason. Like it gives life purpose and maybe even meaning. Like when someone talks about like, what's the meaning of life? A lot of times you think like, that means what am I supposed to do in the future? But it's more so about being able to look back at the life that you've already lived and feeling like it was a worthwhile endeavor and being able to connect the dots and look at like, oh, it wasn't all just like random chaos and luck. And I mean, those are definitely elements, but it's important to be able to have perspective on the journey that you've already gone on to help you pick the roads ahead of you.
I love that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. What a great conversation. I have so many more questions, but I definitely will save those for another interview at another time.
Sounds good.
My last question for you though is, you know, looking ahead, obviously you have done so many amazing things. Yep. What exciting projects or even more collaborations can we anticipate from Fear of Water? And how do you envision the evolution of your music in the future?
So the next two singles are with Clint Lowry. And then the one after that is with Sahaj Tikitin, who is the lead singer of Raw, but also a very prolific. The amount of people who enjoy music that he has had his hands on, but don't know him is quite extensive, but it's, you know, Star Set and Bad Wolves and Otherwise and Motley Crue and so many of these bands. And, you know, he really gave me a huge shot when we recorded five songs together in 2021, which led to him inviting me to join Raw. And, you know, I owe him a debt of gratitude and I'm happy to call him friend. And, you know, it's great to have him featured on an upcoming single as well. In terms of the future, like, I'm just really flooring it in terms of the amount of momentum that I've built up with these current collaborations. And it's not all about the numbers, but when I'm approaching someone who creates music and lives this life for a living, and this is how they feed their family, especially if there's management is a part of the conversation or whatever, like, I need to be able to sell myself, and having quantifiable success numbers in terms of charts and streams and video views and downloads, it matters. So it's great that I've been able to put together basically this like portfolio, and you know, I'm just relentlessly pursuing the creation of the best music I can possibly create. There's a lot of really, really amazing collaborations that are being discussed right now. I'm starting three new songs. I just finished the demos last night with Joseph McQueen, who's done a lot of work with Howard Jones from Killswitch Engage and his solo projects, and a lot of other great bands. And I'm just really excited to continue to work with like new producers, new engineers, new collaborators, and, you know, see where that takes me. There is kind of this like forked path ahead of me where it would be amazing to, after 20 years of trying and failing and starting over, to like build a physical band around Fear of Water and take it on the road. And that's an opportunity I would be incredibly grateful for. But the path of least resistance that I see for me, and something that I'm very attracted to, is using Fear of Water as like my audio resume, and these interviews, and again, those like quantifiable success, to basically just be in the right place at the right time. You see all of these bands, very prominent, signed, touring, recording bands that have turnover all the time just because of life. But like Dayseeker needed a new drummer, and Smashing Pumpkins needed a guitarist, and Bring Me the Horizon lost a keyboard player, and Pop Evil lost a drummer. And like, you just see more and more of these examples. And to me, this is, I'm inserting myself in the Rolodex of decision makers by just, you know, fully immersing myself in this community, in this industry. But even if that does happen, even if next year you and I are talking and I'm the drummer for Breaking Benjamin or whatever, I will always make Fear of Water music and release it until I die. Cause like I said, it's talking and breathing for me. And the one last final note is that I'm really excited about, like, I take music incredibly seriously, and it is the thing that I have the most direct control over, but something that I don't have direct control over and I'm not gifted in at all is like visuals. And so I've gotten to the point where I'm really excited about the creative team that I've aligned myself with, both from a graphic design standpoint and from a music video standpoint. I just filmed five music videos in Dallas, Texas last week for five new songs, new collaborations that are coming out, and making sure that the visual representation of everything that I release is at the same level of the like quality of audio and songwriting that I'm putting out is a huge part of my passion. So I'm just really excited about this tsunami of Fear of Water content that's going to be coming towards everyone in the next year.
Well, I am super excited as well, and I am grateful for your time today. I'm glad that we got to connect, because now I'm like, I can't wait to see you like just keep going and going and going.
Oh yeah,
so,
yeah.
Appreciate you. So as far as people listening in, and maybe they don't know where to find you, what's the best way for people to follow you so that they can also tune in and watch you grow?
Sure. Fear of Water is available on all major streaming and download platforms. And I know a lot of people hear about like how much streaming sucks and no one gets paid anything and blah, 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 blah. But someone at my level, an independent artist, and certainly independent artists you haven't heard of, like, you playing our music on there does a lot of good algorithmically, and adding whatever favorite songs you have of mine or others to your playlists does even more. And sharing that music with friends and family via text or your social channels is absolutely amazing. So like, even doing those small things means a great deal for someone in my position. So Wherever you get music, download and stream, Fear of Water is there. And then in terms of like connecting with me, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook are the main places that you can go, is where I'm actually engaged with people. Like, I take the social part of social media very seriously. Anyone who's a part of these communities knows that I respond to literally every single DM, every single comment, even if you're shit talking, like I'm gonna get in there. So yeah, come talk to me. Like I really take pride and joy in connecting with the musical community.
That's awesome. So you guys make sure you go follow, and then obviously listen. That's the most important as well. So Dave, I appreciate you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Till the next episode with you, but
1 year, we're doing it.
I will definitely keep in touch. Thanks
so much. Cool. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Teaser Talk. Head over to teasertalk.com to subscribe so you don't miss out on another episode. Until next week, keep rocking.